God, it is it's so much more than we deserve. Boy, if this life is about us getting what we deserve, we're in a whole lot of hurt. There's this thing called grace, God, that you pour out, you offer to us, and it's so hard for us to get our minds around exactly what it is. I just ask that you would bring the picture of grace and understanding of grace alive to us tonight from your words, the Bible, that we might all be able to step into deeper places of healing wherever it is that we hurt. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, we've been spending these 4 weeks now taking a look at what we've called the United States of Addiction. Which is, as we take a look at just the communities that we live in, we realize that addiction is something that everybody wrestles with in one form or the other. And certainly there's the big five, very socially unacceptable addictions that we're used to, kind of hearing about. But all the way to some of us have found ways to cope and found ways to function in life that are more socially acceptable addictions. And we're addicted to things that drive us in just as unhealthy of a place. But our focus has really been some of those things that take us to really kind of dark corners of our life. And, just as kind of a reminder during this series, this is the working definition of addictions that we've kind of been wrestling with here. Addiction is any repetitive choice that results in something having control over us. Any repetitive choice that results in something having control over us. And part of what we've looked at is the fact that addictions are a disease. They are a disease. They fit all the requirements, of what a disease is that when we take a look at it medically. However, we've also looked at the fact that some people take the fact that addictions fit all that criteria of disease, and they use that as kind of some kind of get-out-of-jail-free card, that they don't have a personal responsibility of making healthy choices in their life. And that while they are a disease, it is something that through our choices, we can get to places where we are moving past them. We don't have to be under control of these addictions in our life. We even took a look, one week at what neuroscientists are learning about how the brain, the brain can actually be physically rewired depending on the choices that we're making to get us to healthier places. And we've also looked at the fact that sometimes in someone's life, sometimes God just does this kind of miraculous, instantaneous thing, and they are healed. And they are healed and kind of moved on. But more often than not, the way God tends to work healing in our life is through more of a slow, gradual roller coaster that we're on, a kind of a slow, gradual, steady journey of making hard, painful choices, but in the right direction. And that's where we're going to pick this up as we close this, out tonight, of what kind of this slow stumble in the right direction, sometimes looks at. And we're going to start tonight with a somewhat controversial passage in the Bible. We have talked a lot about, the Apostle Paul here and how he wrote much of the New Testament. And a lot of the New Testament are letters that he wrote to new churches that were starting up. And so there's the letter to the church in Rome, the letter to the, Well, tonight we're going to start in this controversial area that he wrote to the new church in Corinth. And it's an area of 2 Corinthians I want to look at here. If you want to go ahead and pull that up, it's 2 Corinthians 12:7. Now, well, I'll just read this, and then I'll tell you, kind of what makes this such a controversial passage. 2 Corinthians 12:7. Paul has been talking about kind of struggle and sufferings and how this plays out in our life and how we can grow through it. And then he's also talked about a lot of the amazing things God has done through his life and the amazing things that was being accomplished through Paul. And he says, though, in 7, but to keep me from becoming conceited because of these surpassingly great revelations, there was given me a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan, to torment me. Now, this is controversial because for some people just invoking, the name of Satan here, that there's this messenger of Satan to torment me, it kind of freaks people out. They don't want to think about the fact that there may be a whole lot of other things that are going on in the world that are related to us being spiritual beings other than what we can just touch and feel and taste. So that kind of freaks them out, and that's somewhat controversial. The other thing, though, that's controversial, even for people that doesn't bother, is the idea that the Apostle Paul, who God used in such incredible ways, would have this thorn. And we don't believe it was a literal thorn. He's speaking metaphorically here. That he would have this thing in him that's tormenting him that he would never get rid of. They say, boy, if anybody, who is growing and learning and God was really using, why would Paul be stuck with this thing that torments him all his life? It just doesn't seem right. It doesn't sync with this idea that I want to think about with spirituality, that the closer I get to God, the more comfortable I get. This isn't adding up. So that's controversial for people. And then the last thing that makes this controversial is there's been great debate over the ages by Bible scholars over what Paul's thorn was. You know, most people believe, you know, it was not a literal thorn and metaphorically, but what it was. And so some scholars really strongly believe that because of other writings they've seen elsewhere about Paul's eyesight, that maybe it was a degenerative eye disease that he had and that he was never healed from and it just kept getting worse and that he had to deal with that and wrestle with that all his life. Others have felt, no, you know, it's some sort of other, you know, kind of degenerative disease that he had. Or some felt, no, it wasn't a disease at all. It wasn't a physical ailment. It was a temptation. And what Paul's thorn in his flesh was lust, and how he was tempted in lustful ways. He's tempted in sexual ways, or you know maybe it was pride. You know, his kind of temptation. So there's been a lot of you know debate. And there's even some that you know very strongly feel that when God was talking about the thorn in his flesh here, he was drawing an image of all pastors who pastor a local church and what it's like to have to put up with church people constantly complaining. All right, I just made that last one up, okay? You know, I'll take my shot as well, though. I mean, they can have their hypothesis. That's, you know, maybe mine. What's interesting, though, is I think that God obviously could have spelled this out more here, but he didn't. He was purposely nebulous. And I think he was strategically nebulous here because he knew if he spelled out what that was, if that was, you know, a physical ailment or if that was lust, you know, whatever, anybody who didn't have that would kind of check out on this. But yet what God was saying is, this is for everyone. I want everyone to understand this reality of imperfect people living in an imperfect world means you need to wrestle with the reality of the thorn. There is a reality of the thorn in everyone's life that you have to realize. Growing closer to God is not going to involve getting to a place where you are perfect, where you don't have temptations. It doesn't involve getting in a place where you don't have problems and you don't even maybe have physical ailments. There is going to be, whatever it is, we all have the thorn. There's a reality of the thorn. And Paul elsewhere talks about this holy struggle that we have. You know, he talks here, you know, it's interesting that, you know, at the beginning of this, he says he knows the reasons why he has his thorn. You know, he doesn't say what the thorn is, but it's clear the reason: to keep me from becoming conceited. That God put this thorn in Paul's life is actually a blessing to him, because God realized that whenever he does something significant through someone, there's this natural temptation we have to say that it's about us, to start to think that, you know, kind of it's about me. And God, and he knows the nasty ditches that we can fall into when we start to think it's about ourselves, and the tunnels that we can end up in. And so as a gift to Paul, he gives him this thorn to keep him dependent on him. For Paul to realize where his power and where his strength and where his healing is coming from, the thorn will never be gone, because Paul, it keeps him in a relationship of dependence on his Creator, which is the healthiest place that he could be. And the first thing I think a lot of us need to realize is we're wrestling with, boy, am I becoming dependent on something in my life, you know, in an unhealthy way that's either has become or has a chance of becoming an addiction, is we need to recognize the reality of the thorn. The fact that sometimes God miraculously heals somebody of something, other times God works healing in us, but it's more of a slow, steady thing, and somehow there's a consequence that we limp with for the rest of our life. And that there's a reality of the thorn that we still have with us. Not that we don't get healed of it. Not that we don't have to deal, succumb to that temptation anymore. But often healing looks more like a slow, steady stumble in the right direction than anything else. And we need to recognize the reality of the thorn. Now, that's pretty intense. But fortunately, that's not the only reality God gives us when it comes to healing and when it comes to working through issues in our life. He also gives us, you know, what I call here the gift of community. That we've got this necessary reality of thorn, but we also have the gift of community. And it's the fact that God did not create us to do life by ourselves. That from the very beginning, he designed us so that we would have to lean into other people. And that two of God's inventions, and these are God's inventions, not ours, two of his inventions he gave us for experiencing a little bit of this community is family, you know, marriage and family, and the church. Those are God's inventions, not ours. Now, what's interesting is when I throw that out and I say two of God's gifts he's given us for growth and for healing, the main ones are family and the church. A lot of us, you know, we kind of flinch at that. We kind of flinch because, honestly, our reality that we've experienced is that family, you know, marriage or, you know, church is not a place of healing. As a matter of fact, it's a place where we're more likely to get the scabs ripped off than we are, you know, to see kind of healing form. And so we have a hard time kind of thinking about community being a gift that God has given us for our healing. And it's interesting to think about. You know, I have to admit that reality. For a lot of people, family and church is a place of pain, and it's not a place of healing. And, you know, you wonder kind of why that is. And I believe with all my heart, I know why that it is. And this is where it starts to feel a little freaky for folks. But I'll tell you, I believe the reason why is evil. There is evil in the world. And evil works in ways that it wants to cause divisiveness. It does not want community. It does not want people to be together. So evil attacks at the very root and looks for, gee, what areas are there in life that possess the most significant potential for real intimacy? And realize that that's family, that's marriage, you know, that's the church. So evil attacks at the root and says, that's the greatest potential for intimacy. I'm going to take those gifts that God has given people, and I'm going to twist them just a little bit. And I twist them just enough, those will be places of pain instead of healing. So people will come to church, and they'll think that church is all about a place where people that are really good at faking it get together to compare notes on how to do it better next week. You know, or they'll say, you know, the family's a place where that is the last place where you get really real and you get really naked with your emotions with someone else. Because evil attacks at the root. And it's interesting what God says in the Bible about the role that others have in our growth and others have in our healing. Elsewhere in the Bible, in the book of James, James was writing and he was talking about, this is in the New Testament Bible, he was talking about wisdom and the role that actually doing things, that faith working out in actual deeds in our life is important. It's not enough just to say, I believe, but that real faith works out in somebody's life through actual works and deeds. And he does that in, here he's talking about one of the ways that plays out in James 5:16. It says, therefore, confess your sins to each other and pray for each other so that you may be healed. There it right is. How might you may be healed? One of the ways God works healing in our life is that we confess our sins to each other and we pray for each other. You know, the fact is, whether you want to recognize it or not, you need to know there's evil in the world, and evil does not like community. Evil wants you to keep your story to yourself. I see this, you know, happening, you know, in all kinds of ways, you know, around here. One of the ways that I'll refer to across as often is looking real good and hurting real bad. And what I mean by that is there's all these people, we're all going through these significant things. We've got all this baggage, we got these problems, you know, and a lot of us are bleeding in a lot of ways. But we find ways to clean up really well when we come in here on the weekend. And so you come in here and you look around the auditorium and say, wow, you know, they all look pretty good. These people, things are going, they're looking pretty good. Life's going really well. And we start to think that we are the only one. We are the only one who's limping on the inside. And what happens is we come in here and we know we're limping on the inside, but we clean ourselves up really well. So when we come up here, we're looking real good. We see all these other people that are looking real good. And what's our reaction? Wow. Wow. These people all have their lives, you know, really well together. Instead of what our reaction should be when we come in here and see all these people looking real good, say, wow, all these screwed up people clean up really well too, you know? But we don't do that. We tend to keep our story to ourselves, and we think that, you know, kind of we're the only one. But there's something about this thing of confessing our sins to each other, getting real with your story with someone else, and having them pray with you, that there is healing in that. I know for me, as I've been, you know, thinking through this addiction series, I've been thinking about, boy, what in my life probably came closest to I could have spun further and further, you know, kind of in that, particularly before I wrestled with what it meant to be a follower of Christ. And for me, it just, you know, it was sex. You know, there was a time in my life where I was not even kind of asking questions about who God was or anything. And sex was playing a role in my life about my significance, about who I was, about intimacy, all these kind of things, and increasingly dangerous ways. You know, whether it was exposure to pornography or just unhealthy behavior and all this stuff, found myself, you know, just kind of in the spiral. And it was, you know, kind of getting real with some people around me at a key time in my life where I started to find some real healing and actually began with kind of getting more painful than less. But you know what? As we've been doing Crossroads now for, 8 years or so? And I've talked with a lot of guys who've kind of gotten real. And I've found, you know, I am not the only one. There are a lot of guys. As a matter of fact, most guys, you know, have somehow been negatively impacted by pornography or unhealthy kind of sexual stuff in their life. And they're carrying, you know, kind of this baggage around. So much so that I just call it guy's disease. You know, it's just something that guys have. And you know, there's kind of two groups of guys, you know, in any community. And one, the vast, vast majority, by the largest, maybe 95% of them, the largest group is guys who say, yeah, you know what, in some way, pornography still has me kind of screwed up, you know, or these kind of past sexual things, and it's still, you know, something I really wrestle with. And those are the guys, you know, I just call that group, you know, the group with guy's disease, you know. And then admittedly, there is a small group of guys, you know, in every group as well, much smaller percentage, who'll just say, you know what, for whatever reason, I have my challenges in life, but for whatever reason, that has just not been one of them. You know, the lust, you know, it's like that just hasn't been one, you know, that's, you know, kind of played in my life. And I call that group good liars, you know, is what I tend to call them. You know, it's just something that in one way or the other. And for me, and now I've been on a significant kind of trend of growth in that area for about 10, 15 years now. But for me, the key crossroad points on that have been times where I got vulnerable and I was looking real good, but I kind of let somebody see a little bit beneath the veneer. And I sat down with a close friend of mine and said, hey, you know what? This is what I did on this business trip. You know what? And I think this is just, I'm making bad choices. Or there was a time when I sat down with my pastor, and there was a time when I got real with my wife and I sat down with her and I said, hey, this is something, you know, that I got going on. And, those times and those places of being able to tell my story to somebody else, was this confessing your sin to someone else and having them pray with me, have been kind of key, just pivotal moments in my healing as I've grown kind of along the way. And I've seen this in a lot of different ways in these 8 years at Crossroads, how community plays in some very key ways in our journey. And I have some friends that, you know, I have just made some deeper friendships here at Crossroads than I have almost at any other area of my life. And I have learned from them and they've learned with me. And I've just seen this healing play out in a myriad of different ways. But it all starts with somebody getting real with somebody else and getting vulnerable and doing it in a community. And tonight I want to talk a little bit about that. I've got a good friend of mine that I want to come up and just kind of talk a little bit about this thing of community and how that's played out. So if you just welcome Kurt Platt. I appreciate it. Welcome, Kurt.
Hey, Brian.
Kurt and I go back, what was it, maybe 5 years now or so? Something like that?
Yeah, about 5 or 6 years.
One of our initial journeys was we coached boys soccer together. And let me just, inside tip for anyone, never pray for patience that, oh God, please make me a patient person, and then coach kindergarten boys. It's asking for the worst. So we've been through the fire, haven't we?
Yeah, indeed. We could have prayed for wins too. I think we were 0-9 or something.
Yeah,
like
I didn't want you to bring up our actual record.
Okay.
You know,
for everyone. All right. I'm okay with it.
You've obviously gotten to a place. I'm not okay with it. I'm still working through it. Tell us a little bit about you, Kurt.
Well, I mean, foremost, most important thing to me is that I'm married to a wonderful wife. I've got 3 kids, and my profession, I'm an architect. I have a partnership with 2 other people. So,
and actually, you know, kind of, Kurt, Nancy and I just had the amazing fortune of being able to build a new house. Great blessing. And Kurt actually designed our house, and we absolutely love it. Love it. Kurt, like I said, you know, about 5 years ago or so, we, you know, kind of started a friendship, and it's grown a little bit deeper. But there was a key point in our friendship where it kind of went kind of to a whole new level, and it started with a phone call. What was that?
Yeah, I called Brian. I called Nancy one day, and Brian came running to the house. I kind of joke around to my wife that I think he's got a cape under his shirt or something like that, but within like 10 minutes, he was there, and I can, you know, basically I'd hit this bottom, and I told him that I had been caught up in a cocaine addiction that had been lasting about 3 years, and I had just come home that morning, and it was like a 40-hour cocaine binge that I was on, and I was just blown away. Everything was just crumbling all around me, and I guess the first time I reached out. So
I'll never forget that phone call. I'll never forget sitting down with Beth and you. What people talk about kind of their worst moments, you know, kind of thing, as they're wrestling with something like that. What did it look like for you?
Well, I actually had lost 2 jobs at 2 great companies. The first job, I don't think they quite understood what it was, but it was a direct result of my addiction. Second job was absolutely known, you know, what was going on. I had gone through situations where I was, you know, trying to get my drug. I was mugged and my face was cut open. They were going for the jugular, but I survived that.
And that's interesting. Yeah. And I know it wasn't just coke for you. It was also alcohol.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, I mean, it was alcohol for, some, you know, 20-some years, really, and just in the last 3 years, it spiraled, and coke became part of it.
But it's interesting because you think about, boy, an architect, a Hyde Park architect, you know, that there would be, there's so much more civil way to deal with your addiction. It must have been mail order or something, you know, kind of going on, but yet you've got these ugly stories of how it spiraled for you.
Right, yeah, and other things that had happened, you know, I got involved with trade my car to the dope, you know, dealer in order to, you know, get my drug. And one time it didn't come back. It was destroyed. The second time it came back, but a week later. And just, you know, just all this chaos, all these decisions that made absolutely no sense. It was absolute insanity.
And as you've talked about those things, though, which is pretty intense stuff, you said for you, though, people talk about the bomb, that wasn't it for you. That didn't cause you to change, that kind of junk.
No, I mean, I just kept, you know, cranking through all this chaos. And my bottom was a couple things happened. One of them that just flattened me was, you know, my wife came to me and, you know, we just celebrated a marriage 15 years, and we'd been together 22 years. And she said to me one time after some stuff happened that I had become a man of no integrity, and it just floored me. And then something that happened around that time was I read my son's diary that he does at school, and this whole thing, it was just full of fear. He said, you know, my daddy didn't come home last night. He wasn't home this morning. And that happened a lot. And I'm scared for my daddy is the kind of tone that his journal had. So.
Wow. Now, when you've made an interesting point to me before when I've talked about hitting bottom and how people talk about hitting bottom.
Yeah, I mean, to me, you know, I've been in a 12-step recovery program for a while now, and you know, and I hear people say, you know, what was your rock bottom? What was your rock bottom? And to me, rock bottoms, I'm dead, you know. I mean, I've hit spiritual death. I've hit emotional death before. But rock bottoms is physical death to me. And your bottom is I've seen high bottoms, middle bottoms, and low bottoms. And your bottom's when you stop digging your hole, you know, simply.
As long as you have the shovel in your hand.
Yeah, you can just keep on digging, you know.
Well, tell us about kind of the journey since then. That was years, several years ago. The journey since then and kind of how community has played into that for you.
Well, you know, I had people around me at this time that, you know, I've been going to Crossroads for 6 years and not really just tapping in, but kind of tapping in, kind of what you were talking about earlier about everybody thought everything on the outside looked great, but I was all tore up. And I had a few relationships, and people talked me into some good friends. Greg Gillett is a guy that, you know, I saw up on stage, and we bonded to a degree, and he spoke some real truth to me and said, hey, you need to get into an inpatient. And I went into this inpatient treatment and was just devastated. And I was there for about 10 days, and my wife started bringing me these emails from I was in a Bible study that I had started going to about a month before I went into this inpatient treatment, and there was like six guys in this Bible study, and I got this email, and it said, you know, Dave Peterson, my friend that got me into it, said all the guys were praying for me and that they were fasting for me every day of the week. Each guy took a day of the week, and he took two because there's 7 days, you know, and you know, it just started tucking at my heart. I was like, holy cow, you know, what, you know. I went six times and these guys are not only giving me some grace, they're fasting for me. And then I heard, I got another email, and it was Michelle Peterson, Dave Peterson's wife, was in this Bible study of like, I don't know, 15 women. Many may even be in here. And they were praying for me, and they committed themselves to bringing meals to my house. You know, my wife came home one night, and there was, like, spaghetti and meatballs sitting on the doorstep, you know. And it just blew me away. And and then, you know, there was, I had this counselor in treatment, and she...
Well, you know what, I want to ask, there was one part of community that wasn't quite so strategic that happened, where, you know, kind of sharing your story with others, with Sydney.
Yeah, I was in treatment, and... my daughter was really upset. You know, their birthdays, they spent their birthdays with me in a treatment center. And she came home and she went to school and she was really kind of sad. And the teacher, it's a class of 24 people. And in front of the whole class, she said, Sydney, you know, what's wrong? You know, why are you so upset? And she goes, my daddy's in the hospital. And she goes, well, what's he got?
In front of all the kids.
And in front of, you know, she goes, alcoholism. You know? And so... like a week later, I'm at this treatment center, and you got every walk of life in this treatment center, and we're all bonding, you know, these guys. And I get this package, and it's, you know, 24 get well cards to it, you know. And they're all like, no way, no way, you know. You know, kids are, do they know what you got? Yeah, they do, you know. Alcoholism. So, you know.
There was, There was a moment, I know, at the one treatment center
yeah.
where you were wrestling with forgiveness.
Yeah, it was right after all this stuff had happened. You know, I heard about the fasting. I had heard about, the meals showing up. And there was this counselor, and she said, have you forgiven yourself? And I was just blown away by that. I couldn't comprehend it. I was, what do you mean forgive myself? I've got, I've got my employer. He fired me. He's not going to forgive me. My wife's not going to forgive me. My kids shouldn't forgive me. Nobody really should forgive me for that. And I just, it was like this epiphany, and it was like, you forgive me, And I prayed to God, and I had this spiritual experience that was just mind-blowing and changed my life since. I felt the grace of God. I felt forgiveness. And I started on a new path. I started on this journey that's just been...
And so it's been just a steady uphill climb.
No. I mean, I've had my struggles, and I've learned that I need to surrender. I learned what surrender was on that day. I learned what community was, about reaching out. In active addiction, you isolate yourself so much from everything. And we don't want to reach out I didn't want to reach out because I was taught from when I was a kid, I need to be independent. I'm not supposed to be reaching out. That's weakness. Mm. But I've learned that I need to surrender on a daily basis, and I forgot that, and I had my struggles since then. Absolutely.
Now, I know that you're at a place, now where it's kind of that the reality of the thorn, of the thing that you feel like you've been healed of this and you've moved beyond. But at the same time, there's a reality to how you need to treat life.
Right. There's, I have a disease of addiction, and right now I feel like that desire to use and to drink has been lifted from me. And it's been a long process. I've been through AA. I go to NA right now. And I'm very militant about the way I handle that in my life. And it's a very freeing thing. I've got community. Greg Gillett, that guy was like, he and I talk daily. We talk every single day. And it's because we want to talk, and I help him, and he helps me. I have to do these things. If I'm moving forward, if I'm healing, I'm good. But if I'm not, there's no such thing as standing still for me. If I'm not moving forward in my recovery or in my growth or my relationship with God, I'm going backwards, and I put myself at great risk. Mm. And that's my thorn. Mm. And I find that thorn to be a blessing in my life today.
Mm. Now, I know you recently kind of had two little snapshots that have kind of shown you what God's done in your life since that phone call, several years ago kind of thing. What was it with the one?
Well, actually, there's three. My wife she served me divorce papers, 2.5 years ago. And, really, there's four. She's still in my life. Then after I was in recovery for a while, she decided to have a baby with me, and I've got a one-year-old baby. And then the other thing that happened was a couple weeks or a couple months ago, I was sitting there reading in bed with my wife at night, and she just turned to me and said, you've become more of the man that I ever dreamed that I would ever want to be with. So, and it's a big move from a man of no integrity. So,
and then I think I was always so just moved by you going to Sean's school and discovering, his journal entry, about Daddy didn't come home last night and just how that tore at you. But there's a more recent journal entry that you stumbled upon. You actually brought his journal tonight, didn't you?
My wife told me about this. She went to an open house, and she called me up and said, you have to read this entry.
This is like a week ago, right? It's a month ago. It's about a month
ago. Yeah, this is August 30th. And it says, my dad is a hero to me. He's my hero because he gets me to school on time. Sometimes when he gets home from his office, he brings me treats. Yesterday, he brought us moose cake. He sometimes goes to school parties. He takes me and my sister to fun places. He can fix about everything that breaks. He sometimes lets me stay up late. Once we were watching the Olympics, and he let me stay up late to watch someone to win a record. So, kind of blew me away.
Well, Kurt, I want to say here, just probably one of the things we think about when we think about community, especially when somebody's going through a tunnel, is that, we need to be there for them and, help them and all that. And that's certainly the case. And I'm only one little fragment of the people that have been in Kurt's life in some way, but the things I have learned from Kurt, you know, I just want to say the way what I've learned about being a husband, about being vulnerable with my wife, about being vulnerable with my kids, and being on a journey of growth, that I've learned this. I just want to thank you for being in my life in that way as well. And I want to thank Beth and just everybody who's been around you and been so, so strong. So, thanks for sharing your story.
Thanks,
for
sharing.
You know, one of the things that we will talk about here when somebody gets really vulnerable with their story up here is that in a crowd the size of this, that it can put them in an even more vulnerable position, because certainly it touches people and it connects with their story and they want to come up and kind of connect with them. And, you know, I just want to say, just as kind of a little cloak of protection that we've learned from the past, what we need to do, a cloak of protection, I just want to put over Kurt is, hey, man, if you want to tell him how his story touched you or something, definitely do. He needs to hear, you know, that kind of affirmation of how he used. But as far as, you know, needing any further help or, you know, things like that, I want to tell you that we have things set up here at Crossroads. I don't want everyone to overwhelm, you know, Kurt with that. Just, you know, simply contact us. One thing I want to really call out to you is that this is the perfect time to join, you know, one of these community groups we have happening that are wrestling with, boy, maybe do I have one of these big five addictions or not, you know, of drugs or alcohol or sex or eating, any of those. So if you're feeling that, the best thing to do is I really want to encourage you to take a vulnerable step, but a safe step of checking out that group in this next week. I know there's still some openings there, so definitely check that out. Yeah, the thing is about what Kurt was talking about is community is there for us, whether it's one person or it's, you know, it's 1,000 people. But the thing is, we have to make a choice whether we're going to lean into that or not. You know, the gift of community is there, but it's only there for us if we make the vulnerable choice that we're going to lean into it. And it will involve with at least one person of you dropping the looking real good pretense in order to let them see how you're hurting real bad. There's a gift of community that's there for us, but it needs to involve us actually leaning into it. And there's one more kind of truth that I think God has for us that we really need to kind of be clear on, you know, as we kind of wrap up this journey of taking a look at addictions. And first thing I want to recognize is the fact that I don't want you to hear from us during this series that you have to have God to break your addiction. You know, that if you don't have God, you will never break free. I want you to know, I know people who have gotten past some really ugly stuff in life that have broken addictions, and they've done it without addressing the spiritual piece in their life. I've known people that have done it without God. You can get to a place where you're functioning again in life, and you break the claws of this addiction on you. And I don't want you to hear that we're saying, oh, you can only do that with God, because, you know, that just wouldn't be being real. I've seen it happen where people have been able to do it without God. What I do want to tell you, though, is like what Kurt was talking about with that thing of wrestling with forgiveness and what that means and what grace means, is that you can get to a functioning level in life, but you will never get to the level of life that God designed you for unless you're addressing the spiritual piece. Addictions in our life are a physical, a psychological, and a spiritual issue. It's a well-rounded, holistic struggle that we have, and that if you do not address the spiritual, you can get to a place where you're living life at a functional level. But I want to tell you that God has so much more for you than just functioning. Because a lot of times what we end up doing is we get to a place where we're able to trade our socially unacceptable addictions for some that are a little bit more socially acceptable. And so we become, you know, addicted to people's affirmation, or we become addicted to work or whatever, and it can have just as toxic effect on our life. You can get to a functional level, but if you're going to get to a real place of healing, you're going to have to address the healing of the soul. You cannot just keep trading one medication for the other. You have to get to a place where you find the healing of the soul. And you know what's interesting is that's what Paul talks about, you know, in the back half of this kind of passage here as we go back to the 2 Corinthians 12. Here's what he says after talking about this thorn in his flesh that he has. He says, 3 times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. And the two words that we really need to see is grace and sufficiency. God's grace is sufficient for us, and it's actually in our weakness where he works his power. And if we are only opening up to God out of our strength, out of our looking real good, and never out of our point of weakness, we are missing the major source of power that God has in our life, because that's exactly where God meets us. You have a role in this, and it involves making good choices, maybe just one clumsy step at a time, but making good choices so you put yourself in places where you can experience God's grace. The fact is, the only way you're going to get to the level that God has designed you for is if you do the work of the soul. Kurt talked about his incredible role that AA, that NA has had in his life. It's incredible role that communities had in his life. It's incredible role, you know, that a lot of these things. But at the very core of this, the very core of this was asking some really honest questions about himself and opening up to God's scalpel and saying, God, I've got some broken pieces into me. I realize that it's a dependency on you. You know, it may be that the one step, just the one clumsy step you need to take is you need to contact that community group that started meeting last week that's helping people wrestle through as helping listen to other people talk about their stories and decide, is this something that I need to address in my life or not? They had a great group come out last week, and I know they still have some openings. So you may want to check out at the Info Center and grab some information about that. That may be the one clumsy step that God has for you. And I want to warn you, we've designed that every way that we can so that is a safe place for you. That will be a safe place for you to hear other people's story and start to ask questions. But I want to tell you, safe does not mean easy. Safe does not mean easy. There are going to be some hard choices in this as you do the work of the soul. There's a place in a book called The Great Divorce that C.S. Lewis wrote. And it's about an imaginary bus trip between heaven and hell that a guy takes. And at one point, as he's up on the edge of heaven, he's encountering some people that are debating whether they're going to take the right steps or not, the right steps that these angels have for them that they're to take. And one gentleman that he comes upon is this guy that he comes upon, and the guy is walking along kind of arguing and debating, you know, which path that he's going to take. And it's interesting who he's arguing and debating with, because he's debating with this little red lizard that's sitting on his shoulder. And the lizard's kind of whispering things in his ear, and he's kind of talking back to them. And then he encounters an angel of God, who tells him that there are steps that he can take to get rid of that lizard. And here's the way the passage goes. The angel said to the man, "Would you like me to make the lizard quiet?" said the flaming spirit, who was an angel, as I now understood. "Of course I would," said the guy. "Then I will kill him," said the angel, taking a step forward. "Oh, look out! Wait, you're burning me! Keep away," said the man, retreating. "Well, don't you want him killed?" "Well, you didn't say anything about killing him at first. I mean, I hardly meant to bother with anything so drastic as that." "It's the only way," said the angel. His burning hands were now very close to the lizard. "Shall I kill it?" "Well, I mean, that's a different question now, isn't it? I mean, I'm quite open to consider it, but it's a new point, isn't it? I mean, for the moment, I was only thinking about silencing it, you know? Because up here, well, I mean, it's become so damn embarrassing." "May I kill it?" "Well, there'll be time to discuss that later." "There is no time. May I kill it?" "Please, I never meant to be such a nuisance. Please, really, don't bother. Look, it's gone to sleep of its own accord. I'm sure it'll all be all right now. Thanks ever so much." "May I kill it?" "Honestly, I don't think there's the slightest necessity for that. I'm sure I shall be able to keep it in order now. I think the gradual process would be far better than killing it." "The gradual process is of no use at all." "You don't think so? Well, I'll think over what you said very carefully. Honestly, I will. In fact, I'd let you kill it now, but as a matter of fact, I'm not feeling frightfully well today. It would be silly to do it now. I'd need to be in good health for this kind of operation. Some other day, perhaps." "There is no other day. All days are present now." "Get back! Get back! You're burning me! You're burning me! How can I tell you to kill it? You'd kill me if you did." "It's not so." "Why? What? Well, you're hurting me now." "I never said it wouldn't hurt you. I said it wouldn't kill you." There's a choice. There's a choice in this thing of opening up ourselves to the touch of God's healing grace. And God will lead us, but the fact is, you have a choice of starting to make some clumsy steps in following His lead. Would you stand with me? I can't even pretend to know what waters you're sailing through right now. I can tell you that God has spoken to you these 4 weeks. He's leading you, and the question is going to be, are you going to follow that lead? Some of you maybe need to contact us, stop off at the Info Center, or give us a call on Monday, and you need to check out this week that community group that's meeting to talk about this kind of stuff. That's the safe step. but the tough step that you need to take. Or maybe you just need to lean into a friend and open up and tell somebody some of the stuff that you've never told anybody. Or maybe it's just an honest conversation you need to have with God, where you open Himself up to the kind of healing that only He can do. God, I pray that You would make this a place of healing. That all of us would be able to open ourselves up to Your scalpel and find that life that You've created for us. Find that life of grace by following Your lead. I pray this in Jesus' name.